Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a podcast by two people who are more than a little embarrassed to have a podcast about Star Trek The Next Generation. I might be the most embarrassed because this is my only podcast, and it's about Star Trek The Next Generation. Ben has other wildly popular podcasts about far cooler subjects, and I'm just happy to be with him.
I'm Ben Harrison. On average, my podcasting isn't as embarrassing as, you know, you would think it might be from a sample of only this show.
I've got to ask you, because you're the professional around here of both of us. Like, we're on episode 5 right now. Is it pledge drive time?
Calling me a professional is a very generous misstatement, given that I have never been paid.
Oh, jeez.
Cast a pod.
I was promised payment, so this is awkward.
Yeah, I don't know who said that to you, but we will not be able to honor contracts that were written.
Welcome to the final episode of The Greatest Generation. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
Who's becoming a speech?
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
I'm entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
All right, so this is Where No One Has Gone Before, episode 5.
This might be the only episode that actually has a title pulled straight from the intro, right?
Yeah, there's also an eponymous line from Data in this episode, which pretty rare to have it happen. I mean, Obviously it happens a lot in the episode Darmok, but
you speak, of course, of the special 3-hour podcast episode that we're already planning for the episode Darmok.
Darmok will be a very special episode.
Podcast. Our microphones burn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this episode. I think we're on a good trend so far from the really low lows of episodes 2 and 3. Now we're here in episode 5, starting to see some of the potential of the series. So what's happening here is the Enterprise is meeting up with another Federation ship to onboard a warp propulsion expert from Starfleet named Mr. Kaczynski and his pajama-clad, pale assistant, who doesn't really introduce himself. I guess he says his name is not pronounceable by humanoids.
Yeah, they both kind of big dog Riker in different ways, right, when they beam on board.
Riker kind of comes down to the transporter room with a chip on his shoulder because he doesn't like Kaczynski's ideas and he thinks that it's a bunch of bullshit, which is came as a surprise to me as a veteran watcher of Star Trek The Next Generation that Riker had any technical knowledge at all of warp propulsion.
Sure, I think we're fairly certain his expertise is in holodeck design.
Certain other kind of propulsion.
All forms of pumping.
Yeah. So they go down the transporter room, and the other person in there to greet these guys is Chief Engineer Argyle, I don't know if they were like planning on making this guy an actual character, but they're like, what? Well, if we're going to have take another stab at having a chief engineer, what would a quality be? I don't know. Scottish?
I love Argyle. I think he's the greatest. Did you know the name of that actor is Biff Yeager? Which is an even cooler name than Argyle, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Chief Engineer Yeager. They definitely didn't have like a chief engineer thing figured out at this point in the series. So everybody's pretty skeptical of what's going on with Kaczynski, and he is just brimming with confidence that, you know, Troy really draws a bright line around that he's an arrogant piece of shit.
Yeah, a moment after he displays incredible arrogance for like 3 straight minutes. Yeah. We needed Deanna Troi to turn to camera and tell us how incredibly arrogant he is.
Yeah, they haven't quite worked out how to use her yet in the series either. But they head down to engineering and start to plug in the equations that Kaczynski is so proud of. And maybe this is a good time to stop. I mean, we've taken a bunch of pot shots at the set design department, but mm-hmm. I think that the ship itself, like the engineering section, the bridge, sick bay, are kind of the big sets that we've seen so far on the Enterprise, and they're awesome. They're so cool. They have thought so many things out, like different areas, different kind of controls that haven't even come into use yet, but are like there waiting to go. And they look so cool. And I love, especially engineering. I just think it's like one of the coolest sets in TV history, maybe.
Yeah, I agree, actually. And I think engineering is really the only set on the entire show that plays a little bit with height, I feel every other set is just wide. You know, like 10 Forward's just a big restaurant set that's wide. The bridge is sort of wide, and there's a little bit of a height difference there. But, like, there's a very real perspective in engineering that, like, there's a super tall tube that you could follow, and you could fall down and kill yourself if you fell off a railing. Like, the scale actually works in a really compelling way.
It's just super well done.
Yeah.
So, hats off to that stuff.
This has been props to props.
So, they start, they get into engineering, and straight away, Kaczynski's like, "Who's that kid? Get him out of here." And camera pans over, and Wesley Crusher is sitting there in, like, a pretty outrageous bright orange Coogee sweater, and they say like he's there doing some homework or something, or a science project or something like that, I guess Kaczynski's kind of distracted by wanting to get going with his warp experiment, so
he's really excited to show off.
Yeah, he sort of loses the thread on attempting to get rid of Wesley Crusher. So Wesley is there when they start doing the experiment, and he's off in the same alcove where he caused all the problems in episode 2 with the with drunk Shimoda. But he and the assistant character are there together while everybody else is kind of focused on the main engineering control table. So Wesley's the only one that sees that while they are doing this warp experiment, the Traveler, or the assistant, I should say, phases out of existence momentarily, and the ship is propelled 2.7 million light years through a couple of other galaxies and way further out than any Federation vessel has ever gone.
I mean, this scene is very much like the end of 2001, where they go through the light fantastic, right? Like,
yeah, and things and are crazy. Sort of, yeah, and it does something I wish that 2001 would have done, which is shows that they are going through a psychedelic space journey without beating it to death. You know, it's a 30-second sequence, not a 10-minute sequence.
That's the good part. The bad comparison is like they totally go plaid, like Spaceball 1, right?
Yeah.
That's another way to describe it.
Yeah, and there's a pretty funny moment where Picard says, like reverse engines stop the ship, and Data's like, nobody has ever tried that at this speed. And Picard's like, shut up and do it!
You know, after they separated the ship at maximum speed, like, nothing really surprises me anymore about what the captain wants to do at any speed.
Yeah.
Like, that's regardless of the consequences.
Mm-hmm. It's the one area where he's incredibly unrestrained. they sort of talk about how they're really far out. There's some discussion on the bridge. I guess Picard calls Kaczynski and everybody else up to the bridge, and they discuss, you know, where they are. And Picard is like, you know, this is great, but it's only cool if you can reproduce it and get us back to where we came from.
Which is factually untrue. Like, where they are is incredibly cool. And this is, like, the one thing about the episode that grated on me more than anything. Like, they're out further than anyone else. They look at the view screen and it looks like an inner-city planetarium. Like, it's something you never see in Star Trek. Things are big and moving. There's and
lots
awesome.
Of colorful space things happening.
And they pretty much look out the view screen and are like, huh, well, we better get out of here.
Yeah. Like, well, Data is pushing for doing some astrometric study, but everybody else is like pretty eager to make sure that they don't have to spend 300 years traveling at conventional warp speed to get back home.
There are episodes of this series where they shoot like 8 probes, like wastefully shooting probes out into space, and in this one they don't shoot one. I don't get it.
A cool move would just be to shoot a probe like right back toward the Milky Way, and in 300 years you'd just get like this incredible wealth of knowledge that you might not have gotten otherwise. I mean, you have no idea.
You'd be a hero, and that's
right.
I mean, as far as bang for the buck, like, why not do that?
We can only hope that there's some division of the science staff that does that stuff without needing to be told to.
Right, right.
I mean, there's 1,000 people on this ship, so it's possible.
Mostly children.
Mostly children.
We're told.
Who are in a grave danger. We should discuss that the assistant character may be pushing in on Picard's side piece with some of the loving looks that he gives Wesley within 13 seconds of meeting him.
Yeah, I mean, he is wearing a Cosby onesie.
Yeah. Yeah, they both have kind of a Cosby thing happening on this episode.
It was 1987. There are pictures of me wearing especially giant sweaters. So, I mean, I get that.
Nice.
Incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
They decide, let's get back to our galaxy. Let's get back to our quadrant. And they head back down to engineering. And Wesley tries to stop Riker and say, like, listen, this Kaczynski guy is full of shit. And it was really his assistant that did some kind of magic alien space math on the warp field. And Riker's just kind of like, yeah, shut up right now. I'm kind of busy, kid. And so they sit down and they start to work on reversing the process. And instead of getting back to the Milky Way, they completely overshoot it by like quite a lot more distance in the other direction. And they wind up in this blue, like, ethereal space. It looks sort of like they're in between two layers of an iceberg with bubbles floating around in it.
Yeah.
It's very psychedelic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just when you thought it couldn't get more psychedelicler, we go way out there this time.
Yeah. They're so far out that they're like, it doesn't even look like space, and they realize that this is not great.
Holy shit. Stop. Stop just a second. The effects we just described, the effect that you described, I thought pretty tastefully. was created by effects designer Robert Legato using water reflection techniques and Christmas tree lights in his basement.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Good job, Robert.
Yeah. I would never have expected that. I think that the transporter beam effect is glitter in a fishbowl.
Oh, I wish I didn't know that.
I'm sorry, Adam.
This has been Demystifying Everything We Love by Ben Harrison.
Mansplaining magic. This is an even worse place to be because no sooner do they arrive there than Worf is like dicking around on the science computer on the bridge and looks over at one of the turbolift doors, and there is a Klingon Targ, which is some kind of wild pig, looks like, that they kind of put some extra horns and fur on.
Yeah, it looked like a warthog with a jacket.
Yeah.
A little doggy jacket.
Which is, you know, it's hard to make a convincing, like, animal that has alien makeup on it.
He looks as much like a ferocious dog as, like, you know, Los Angeles Raiders fans with, like, the spiky shoulder pads, like Legion of Doom wrestling style.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they turn this pig into.
I guess Tasha Yar sees this, and then she has a full-blown, like, daydream where she is back in the colony where she grew up trying to evade a rape gang. So just in case the viewer forgot that Tasha Yar is a sex object, we'll just insert that into the episode right here. And then various other members of the crew have crazy vision/dreams, my favorite of which is a guy who is one of a quartet doing a string concerto, who it's a character that we never see again. And just like when it disappears, he realizes he's just sitting at a table in a room by himself with a beverage in front of him.
He's having a super lonely lunch, and it's real sad when life goes back to normal for him. I'm sort of crushed for him.
Yeah, I almost wondered if it was somebody that like won a contest to have a walk-on role on Star Trek or something. Something I have a hard time getting out of my head when I watch this show is like, which of these people won a contest by like sending in the top of their cereal box to be on this episode?
And conversely, how many of these actors lost a major contest?
Yeah. So traveling this far has also completely exhausted the assistant character who now everybody is onto as being the reason why they could travel this far. So he's in sick bay, and Picard like puts the ship on red alert, tells everybody to really watch what they think about because everything that they think about will manifest into reality if they aren't careful.
Do you think Riker's just really excited about the prospect? Do you think
Riker's like, fuck, I have to be on duty right now? God damn it.
Who poses the most danger at that point? It's probably Riker, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Worf could be incredibly dangerous, but his thoughts just manifest like the warthog, and Tasha Yar just manifests the cat. I mean, what sort of sick filth could Riker conjure just in a half a second of idle thought?
Yeah, man. Admirably on top of his game in this episode.
Yeah. He's keeping it pretty real.
Yeah. So they head to sick bay and they start kind of interrogating the assistant, who admits that he is actually, in fact, a traveler from sort of a different plane of existence. And I guess we kind of come to understand that in his like level of reality, thought and time and space are not distinct concepts, and that he's sort of, I guess, like the crew of the Enterprise. You know, they ask him at one point, like, where are you trying to go? And he says, it's not about where I'm going, it's about traveling around.
Yeah, some sort of 70s hippie trying to get to Burning Man.
Yeah, but I feel like that's kind of true of the crew of the Enterprise, too. Like, they occasionally have destinations, but they're out here to explore, so...
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like they can get down with that.
Yeah, they're alike like that. I mean, Beverly's having a hard time putting them back together, because he's described as generally human, which I thought would be a great title for a Star Trek makeup artist instruction manual.
Yeah.
Pretty much the advice they give everyone.
Yeah. What stuff can we change about your nose to make you look a little bit weird?
Folds. Always more folds.
This is kind of a long scene, but I kind of like it. A nicely lit scene, and the only thing that's like really ridiculous about it is that Kaczynski is in there, and like Kaczynski has been completely and utterly discredited as being what he claimed to be at this point, but yet he still gets to have like a story arc. Like, he gets to be like one of the people in there interrogating the Traveler, and then he gets like a moment of redemption at the end, which is like, I don't know why this like, I think he's an ensign based on his... based on his collar. Like, why do we care about him at this point?
I was distracted by the fact that he doesn't wear a communicator badge. And his pips are all weird around his neck. Like, I wasn't sure that he was even a real member of the Federation. Is he?
Oh, maybe he's not actually in Starfleet or something. But they hadn't decided that those people couldn't wear uniforms yet or something.
Yeah, it was weird.
Like, they definitely don't ever like say a rank out loud, as far as I can remember, though.
I think we can be sure he's probably a contract labor person.
Yeah, he's a private contractor on a government contract, one of those no-bid jobs.
Right, just another fucking handout.
It's fucking pork in the legislative process back on Earth.
God, so much pork in engineering.
Yeah, not to mention the holodeck. Hey.
Oh!
So they do this interrogation, and at some point, somebody brings up Wesley, and I feel like the other thing that's really funny about Wesley so far in the series is that whenever he comes up, someone says, "The boy?"
Wesley, I wanted to speak to you about the boy.
It makes me think that maybe Wesley was supposed to be a main character of the show, with how often they emphasize his relationship to other people. They do that for him in a way they don't do it for anyone else.
Right. Yeah, like he's sort of like our proxy in this universe or something like that.
I mean, in both youthfulness and in sweaters, for sure.
Yeah. I sort of wonder, maybe that comes from like Luke Skywalker... in the Star Wars series, like he's sort of doesn't, you know, he's sort of a newcomer to the fight, and so things get to be kind of explained to him, and we can kind of identify with him as an audience.
That makes sense.
Maybe taking a page from the George Lucas playbook by having Wesley be such a prominent figure on the show.
Yeah, they really like dial up his wonder in a way that is consistent with that theory, I think.
So this interrogation scene ends with the Traveler asking everybody but the captain to leave the room, and he confides in the captain that Wesley is no mere boy, but in fact is like the Mozart of warp technology, a prodigal genius that his talents have yet to completely reveal themselves, and they will be supernatural, but he admonishes Picard not to reveal this to Wesley or anyone.
Of all the things Picard has revealed to Wesley, he's got to somehow keep this a secret.
It's a weird moment. I mean, you sort of wonder why it's important that it's a secret, and that's not really explained, but
I think in the same way that like talented people shouldn't be told they're great all the time, otherwise they turn into an asshole.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Maybe that's my problem. So he agrees to get them back to where they started, but he needs Wesley's help. And so they wind up back in engineering for a third time, and this time he and Wesley like take hands while they are going that's, to warp speed.
It's like hand and claw. Yeah. Because the Traveler's hands are like
He has taped like together. Three-fingered hands.
They're like Zoidberg hands.
Yeah.
They're actually it's a weird choice of hands to have for like an engineer type who's got to he's got to type little buttons all the time to make things happen.
You would think it would compromise his ability to interface with the computers on the Enterprise with his big fat fucking fingers, but
he needs the dialing wand from The Simpsons.
Yeah, but anyways, we get like a little redemption moment for Kaczynski, and they get back to the same course and heading that they were on before, and in the process, the Traveler phases out of existence entirely and completely disappears. Which is not the end of the episode, because Picard is like standing on the bridge with his crew and goes like, "Get that kid up here," and and says like, "Wesley, you done good, kid. You know, you were onto this guy way before any of us, and I'm going to make you an acting ensign on the Enterprise." So Wesley gets a field commission right there, and he gets to hang out on the bridge as they head off to their next adventure.
I would argue he did less in this episode than the one where everyone got drunk to save the ship, right?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting moment for a field commission. Like, basically he was there while something great happened this time around. Like,
I mean, it's like Denzel winning an Oscar for Training Day. It's not so much that was like the Oscar-worthy performance of his career.
We're looking at a lifetime achievement here.
Yeah. This is a very Wesley-centric episode, and yet Wesley does not like have a ton of agency in what's going on. So that's a good observation. Would you like me to unveil an exquisitely embarrassing thing about my relationship with the character of Wesley Crusher when I was a child?
Well, I mean, with a teaser like that, the floor is yours.
I went to summer camp one year when I was probably 7 or 8 years old and introduced myself to people as Wesley because I loved the character of Wesley when I was a kid.
Wow.
And I made a couple of friends at this summer camp and like would see them during the school year. And when I went over to their house would be like, "Oh yeah, like I have a different name as far as this kid is concerned." And then at some point had to kind of like confess that I had, in fact been trying this name on for size, but it wasn't my real given name.
Wow.
Yeah. Something that my parents probably should have told me not to do.
They probably should have taken you to a counselor at that point.
I wouldn't have gone if she wasn't half Betazoid.
What, can you please help our boy Benjamin? He's displaying terrible signs.
Yeah.
I think for as popular as the character was at the time, like, I think it's interesting that you don't see a lot of Wesleys running around now. Like, People were not inspired enough to name their child Wesley in a way that, other Hollywood names became popular.
Yeah, that's true. Well, here's to a generation of Rikers, Picards, and Wesleys.
Why didn't you go around that summer camp introducing yourself as Riker? That just seems like a missed opportunity to bone.
Yeah. Oh man, all the sexual opportunities I left on the table because I picked the wrong character to hang my hat on.
God, those camp counselors were totally down to get down, and you just chose the wrong name.
Hmm. Well, let it never be said that I'm a man without regrets.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that which longer nurseth the
Who do you have for Drunk Shimoda for this episode, Ben?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
My Drunk Shimoda is not really a character that causes big-time problems, but there's this scene where Picard is like heading back to the bridge after interrogating the alien, and they're still in this environment where their thoughts can be manifest into reality. And he comes around the corner and there's just a guy in the hallway, like almost engulfed in a wall of fire. And it's just like, it's such a weird scene because Picard has to tell this this crew member.
Put it out! How? Think! Put the flame out in your thoughts!
That's an order!
And the guy has to kind of like go through this very challenging mental journey. And it's just a very ridiculous scene and a very ridiculous casting choice. Like the guy has like a crazy Jerry curl.
Yeah, it's like the extra is Easy E.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like sweating bullets and finally puts it out and, is like, okay, now what? Does that guy just like go take his station like nothing happened or what?
Hey, Rod, why are you so sweaty? I was just in a hallway full of flames.
What's your excuse?
Oh, man. Yeah.
How about you?
My drunk Shimoda is actually you for introducing yourself at a summer camp as Wesley to all those people. I think nothing could be more drunk than the idea of a person trying to impress by, you know, changing their name or making themselves sound cooler than maybe they are. I know you're as cool as you say you are, so I know that's not the case. But that instinct, I feel like, is that of a drunk person. And
yeah. Well, seven-year-olds are essentially drunk all the time.
Your parents sound real cool.
I wish I remembered like how I handled it, because I went to that summer camp for several years, and I definitely only did that one summer. So like I must have gone back and like had to like all the like, you know, teachers and staff and everything had to like explain to them
Roll and you had to correct them every time?
I don't know, man. There's a lot of it that I've shut out of my memory.
Yeah, for a good reason. Well, I mean, there are a lot of episodes of this show, and you're not going to be the only one confiding embarrassing stories about your love for it. So don't worry. My stories are coming. They just don't have any specific attachment to the episode so far.
Darmok.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
So the next episode, Lonely Among Us, the Enterprise passes through a series of complex energy patterns, and the crew find themselves trying to solve the mystery surrounding the death of Assistant Chief Engineer Singh and the altered personalities of Lieutenant Worf, Dr. Crusher, and the Captain. What do you remember about this episode?
Nothing based on that description, really.
Yeah,
when you describe like weird energy patterns, that could be anything.
That could be anything. Yeah. I found a number of different descriptions of this show, and this was like the shortest one, which is why I picked it. But it leaves out that they're transporting two warring factions to a planet, and they're gonna work out a peace deal when they get to this planet. It's a strange episode. Based on the numerous brief synopses I found, because they all sort of said it was about something else.
Huh. Well, the reception is as equally mixed. I guess the producers received a significant amount of fan mail criticizing the apparent cannibalism on the part of the Antikins in this episode.
Oh, are these the like fisheye guys that
I think
eat
so. That's
fish?
What I remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
They received mail, like actual mail, sent through the mail. The alien delegation subplot was so poorly executed that it came off as comedic. And combined with the slow pace and a number of dialogue scenes that can be charitably described as character development, or more accurately described as padding. Wow. I think I'm as close to issuing a veto on this as ever. But with that being said, I think I'd like to soldier through.
Yeah, I like looking at those weird fish guys, and the possibility that this is the episode in which those characters appear is worth it for me to soldier through.
It sounds like the alien designers actually threw away that generally human book and might have gotten a little weird. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them. Well, I think that's about the end of this here episode. It's been a fun one. Would you say this was the best episode yet?
Yes, I would. Our podcast is getting better and better, absolutely.
No, I was talking about the show that we're watching for the podcast.
I would also say that I think the shows are growing in quality, getting near the quality of our podcast. Not quite better, but approaching.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been Ben Harrison.
I've been Adam Pranica.
And this has been The Greatest Generation. Live long and prosper.
Still not saying that.
Yeah, no, I don't think that works.